get me through this thing, this jungle, this complication is not getting fed. My fears and my doubts are. At that moment, rather than going along with your fears and your doubts, simply write down the goals. Trust me right now. You don't need to trust yourself. You don't always have to trust yourself. Find someone else you can trust. You can trust Grant Cardone. I've done this. Okay. Trust me. Let me be there with you. Okay. Pull me into your space right now. Say, hey, Grant, come on, man. What would you tell me to do right now? Let me be your mentor, your virtual mentor, your make believe. Hey, man, you had make believe friends when you were a kid. Have one now. Have your Uncle GC right there with you right now. I believe you can do this. Write the goal down. Just write it down. Whatever it is, $40 billion worth of real estate, $10 billion, whatever your number is, what kind of return do you want? See, I think about, as I do this, I think about how can I provide great housing for tens of thousands of families? Not how can I not do it? How can I provide great jobs for people? How do I provide them with salaries? This is going to be a great thing to do. When I feed the beast, something almost magical happens every time, as opposed to feeding the doubt. I suddenly find myself seeing how I can do something over time rather than how hard or difficult or impossible it might be. You have to learn to feed this obsession or obsessions. Almost out of nowhere, I find myself in different meetings with different information, with different solutions, with people calling me about crowdfunding. I had a guy out of nowhere call me about a REIT the other day. Another gentleman calls me and says, have you ever considered seeding a REIT with your properties? I don't know anything about that. Okay. I just know I'm feeding the beast, and the beast, it's so powerful. It's so magical. Okay. It's going to pull in all the things I need. Obsessed with learning. Look, the easiest way to feed your beast is to spend time learning new things, learning how to be better at what you're doing, getting new information, learning how to use new technologies. Make the super successful your mentors. You do not have to go this alone. I do not teach people how to do something I have not yet done. I can't teach you how to be a billionaire. I have not done that. I don't have the confidence that I can do that for you. Now, I know there's people out there that want to teach you how to do things they haven't done. That's not me. I strongly suggest that you make super successful people who have actually achieved what you want to be your mentors. And being their mentor does not mean you need to spend time with them. I have never met one of my mentors. I consume their content. A successful person, truly successful person, would know what they did to create success. They would actually codify it and be generous enough to write it down or record it, put it somewhere where other people can get this. This is the great gift of the most successful. Those that are generous enough and unselfish enough to literally make their work known, how they got where they got, and put it in books, audio programs, do conferences, interviews, etc. So buy their books, go to their conferences, and read their interviews. Turn your travel time into learning time. Turn that car you have or that airplane you're on, turn that into a library of guarantees. Load your phone with podcasts and audiobooks that you can listen to while driving to work and home. The point is here is to immerse yourself in a mentor's knowledge. Don't just drink the Kool-Aid. Immerse yourself in it, swim in it, poke it in your veins, put it in your ear, okay? Like go all in, become obsessed with that. Then make sure that the people who you live in your home with or work at your company with are reading and on the same material. You cannot go this alone. And by the way, if the people in your life aren't on this path with you, let's face it, you are alone. You're the only one that's obsessed. Feed the economic beast. We live on an economic planet. You and I are reminded every day about economics. And economics don't care about the color of your skin, your religion, your politics, your education, or your intentions, or even the goodness in your heart. It takes money to get anything done, from getting groceries to hiring people to being charitable to taking your company public. It takes money. That's why paying attention to and getting your money right must become part of your obsessive quest. If you want to fly, you need money. I'm telling you, you want to launch to the moon or beyond, you need resources to do that. You must become obsessed with feeding the beast of your economics, that's money, so that it's not a constant and recurring problem dominating you and your company, you and your life, you and your family. You need money. That's why I wrote Playbook to Millions. It's a program about how much money a person needs and start thinking in multiples. Most people don't know how to get money. Fewer people know how to keep it. And almost no one knows how to multiply it. Why? So much money on this planet and so many people short on a resource that is a prerequisite for getting where you want. Value money. Look, though people talk about how important money is, most people spend it on things that are not important. In fact, I would say stupid things that in no way fuel their obsession. I watch people spend money on dumb things and then they borrow money to buy dumb things. They go down in value and then won't borrow money or spend money or invest money on themselves that can never go down in value. Look, there's only one way your life goes down in value. Only one way. Everything else you buy will go down in value. There's only one way your life goes down in value. If you don't stay obsessed, committed, and investing in your future, well, you'll stagnate and then you'll die. And then we'll forget you. Or you'll invest in your obsessions and your purpose. You'll do something extraordinary on this planet and you'll live forever. And your value will continue to rise over time, long after you're dead. The same people that hesitate when it comes time to invest money in things that will create more money for them, they pull back from. Is it any surprise that those with the smallest goals in life have the biggest problems with money? Look, I know this is a painful message to hear, particularly if you're having trouble with money right now. You're like, oh my God, man, come on, man, you're killing me. I'm in debt. My income's not good. I can't save any money. All my money's locked away in an IRA. I don't even know if that was the right thing to do. Look, I know it's a hard message. Let's confront it now. Feed the beast, not the doubt. Look at how the people around you treat money, and you'll see what I mean. A CFO says she's worth a $100,000 salary because of her experience, then constantly complains about salespeople who make $100,000. I'm like, what is worth more here? Okay. Counting the money or getting new money? See, notice the people around you and how they think. How many people around you? We need to save more money. No, you need to make more money. How many people are worried about paying off their college debt? Why would you do that? What you need to do is make money right now. Reinvest in yourself so you can become something. Oh, by the way, why would you pay off college debt when it hadn't paid you? It's a bad investment right now, okay? So what do you need to do right now? I need more information. I need more technology so that I can make my value bigger so I can actually pay this loan back. It's backwards. Everybody's got economics backwards. You don't save it today so you can invest in yourself tomorrow. You invest in yourself today so you can actually have some money to save in the future. The manager of a department sees nothing wrong spending a business owner's money on depreciating items, desks, computers, you name it. Anything that goes down in value, let's go buy it without ever taking time to even get a second bid. But then ask the accounting department to spend 30 minutes trying to find her missing parking receipt to make sure the company reimburses them for $15. Priorities are screwed up when it comes to money. At so many levels, it's no surprise that most companies never make any money. In fact, over 60% of companies in America break even or lose money because their priorities are screwed up. When I was working in an oil refinery field in Lake Charles, Louisiana, I would watch guys work dangerous jobs, putting their lives at risk for 12 and 14 and 16 hour shifts. And as soon as they get off, oh, the whole time, by the way, they're complaining about how little they're paid. As soon as they get off on a Friday night, they blow their entire paycheck in one night. It was amazing. These guys would always talk about how they should be paid more and would work overtime to get paid more, even time and a half, and then blow it all. The same people would sit in a bar complaining as they spent their money, complaining about how they were underpaid and overworked, how they could never save any money, and then pass their money to a person they didn't even know. One of the reasons I am financially successful is that I've always been obsessed with taking care of my finances. I have always made money a priority because I have been without money before. I watched my mom live without money. I watched my mom terrified every single day. For my mom, going to the store wasn't the problem. It was if the electricity, if the lights were left on. A man told me yesterday on a telephone call, he was looking at doing some work with our website. He said to me, you know, I'm just really worried about you. I said, why are you worried about me? He's like, Well, I see you're spending all this money on ads and your conversions. I said, hey man, I left my lights on in my condo today too. You feeling bad about it? See, I don't worry about losing money. I worry about making money. I have my priorities straight. You understand? I need to produce more. You need to produce more. Okay. My mom's problem was not saving money. My mom's problem was her inability to produce new money. Her priorities were screwed up. Her intention was great. Her love of family was enormous. Her obligation to take care of her kids, magnificent. Her priorities were screwed up. She was miseducated on money. Most of us were taught to save money. The truth is you need to make money before you have any money to save or invest. People don't make enough money, period. I've always been transparent and open about wanting more money. Ever since I was a little kid, I've always said, hey, who's got my money? I want some money. I don't want candy. I want the money that buys the candy. I noticed the people that had the money had control, even as a kid. A lot of people would tell me, and still do today, that it was wrong for me to talk about money so much. Today even, hey man, you talk about money all the time. Dude, it's important. Never talk about money, Grant. My mother used to tell me that. I'm like, hey, that reminds me of something I was taught as a kid. Never talk about money ever. Maybe that's why people don't have it. They can't talk about it. See, I'm paying attention to it. In fact, if you study the most financially successful people on this planet, they pay attention to money. They have no problem talking about it. They have no problem having a conversation about it. They get excited about it. Sit down and, hey, how do I make $10 million? They'll want to help you, show you how they can assist you in that because they know there's no shortages. Look, most people are taught not to talk about money, not to make money, not to accumulate money, not to brag about their money. So therefore, they can't. It's no wonder they don't have any. It's no wonder so many people have just enough to make sense of it because you compare yourself to somebody in a third world country. See, I'll never apologize for wanting to get my money right. I'll never apologize to anybody. I'm obsessed with getting my money right because I live on an economic planet and I want to survive and I want to prosper and I want to flourish and I want to help. And I'm not going to apologize for my money any more than I would a breath of air. I need it. I need financial ability that's stable, secure, and indestructible. Yeah, even indestructible. I make it clear to my family, my employees, and my customers, I want lots of money. I deserve lots of money. I know you want me to do well. I want to do well. Let's get us some money. I remember working with a customer who was complaining about the price of my product. And I said to him, money is important to me and my ability to succeed in my business and service you and clients like you. You want me to do well, right? Great. He said, yeah, man, I want you to do well, Grant, but the price too high. Sign right there. See, I didn't apologize for my price or the company's need for money. Who doesn't know that a company needs money? Everybody knows this. Who doesn't know that the family structure doesn't need money? I'll never apologize for wanting money. I have t-shirts that say, who's got my money? I'm open and honest about it. I'll never apologize for wanting money, and I'm going to talk about it. Get your money right to understand and feed the economic beast that you live with every day. You must get obsessed with getting your money right in your life and in your business. When your money's wrong, you worry constantly about the shortages. This puts your attention on the fear and not the beast. If you aren't making money the way you should be, or just making enough to barely get by, or you don't have enough to literally dominate the competition and be like St. Augustine to a weed, then you're doing money wrong. Money is funny. Money's like a jealous lover. Pay attention to it or it'll leave you for someone who will. The first thing to do is to look at where your money is. If you have accounts with money in them, put that money to work. If you have assets or inventory that are worth money, put those assets to work. Also, cut wherever you can cut and be quick about it. Don't wait. Cut it. Take it away, but put your attention on where is my money? Where is my inventory? Where are my valuables and put them to work? Once you're done with those cuts, you can spend the rest of your time expanding and monetizing the valuable things in your life and in your company. What's worth some money? If you're not looking at it, paying attention, where's your checking? Where's your savings? Where's your IRA? Where are your investments? Pay attention to them. Every Sunday, I sit down with my wife and we look at who's got my money. I treat all my companies like produce stands. I remember working in a grocery store and the produce was interesting. The produce department was different than every other department. I was a stocker. I would take and put the soup and the cans and the cereal on the shelves. But the produce was different. I noticed about the produce. The produce went bad. And it had to get changed out more often. It required and demanded more attention. See, I treat my companies like produce stands. My thought is, what do I have to exchange with the marketplace today? What products, what produce, if you will, do I have that could possibly be spoiled tomorrow, no good tomorrow, damaged tomorrow? What do I have to trade with the marketplace today that will get me money that my company needs? I do this with my real estate business. What can we rent today? I do it with my technology business. I do it with my consulting business. I do it with my time. What do we have that we can exchange with someone else that will fund and fuel my obsessions and purposes for tomorrow? What apartments do we have that we can fill today and turn into some money? Do I have some coaches or consultants not working this month that I can push into the marketplace, earning either dollars, branding, thinking, PR, whatever? All that's valuable. Do we have products sitting on our shelves right now that we need to get into the market that would provide a cash surplus or a little bit of a cushion so we can continue to grow? Fertilizer. I'm stuck on St. Augustine. But it needs some fertilizer. It needs sun. It needs water. And it needs attention. Also, don't miss this point. I mentioned it earlier. Once you cut the waste out of an organization, never look at that again. And instead, focus on income. I do the 95-5 rule. I spend 95% of my time on income and 5% on expenses. You can't grow your company by making it smaller. It's not possible. See, this is what I was saying about priorities earlier. Notice how many companies spend most of their time looking at how to make the company smaller. Hey, where can we cut? Who can we cut? What can we cut? The only reason I cut people from my organization is I don't want them here anymore. Because they weeds. Look, you need to grow the top line of your company. You need to grow the top line of your family budget. The rest will not get you there. You cannot grow retreating. You cannot grow getting smaller. So I invest most of my time and energy and creativity. 95% of my time is focused on getting money and 5% of my time on budgets. Invest in getting the attention of your people, the people around you, those that will exchange their money for your products or service and not worry about what you're spending. In 2008, the worst recession in the history of the United States, and many say was worse than the Depression of 1929. In 2008, everyone was having difficulty with sales because all the easy credit, basically we weren't trading money in 2008. We were trading credit digits. We're still doing that today. Companies were having enormous difficulty selling products. So what did I do? I wrote a book called Sell or Be Sold to address the exact problems the entire world I knew would be having over the next 5 or 6 years and maybe forever. I self-published that book and I went door to door, business to business around America. I sold hundreds of thousands of copies of a book at a time when the bookstores wouldn't take it. I couldn't get a book deal. $30 at a time, bang, 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 got me in front of business owners. This was a product, a piece of produce, if you will. Your banana could be a banana, could be an apple, could be a cucumber. In this case, it was a book, got me in front of business owners. And it got me on television. It got me on radio. It got me attention. And the message was, this isn't a bad economy. This is the real economy. The one we got out of was a fantasy. This is the real economy, and everyone must learn how to sell or be sold. It got the marketplace's attention with just a little bit of money, a lot of energy, a lot of creativity, a lot of persistence. I then reinvested that money. I took that money from the book sales and created other problem-solving products that I could scale out to tens of thousands of people. What started as a book selling at $30 later got turned into an online university with 20 million people served just last year. Salespeople, entrepreneurs, sales managers, business owners, independent shops, companies, large companies, the Facebooks and Googles. I've done business with almost everybody on this planet that you know their name of. Insurance agents, real estate agents, mortgage brokers, door to door. Who's got my money? I got something to exchange. I have a product that's worthy of something. Your time, your attention, and yes, your money, even in hard times. Something that I could exchange with people that make other people highly productive and not just give me money, but give me legacy. From their phones, their tablets, their computers, their offices, from home, at hotels and seminars, people came to me over the last 5 or 6 years and said, teach me how to handle customers, how to grow my business, how to get new customers, how to convert internet leads, how to provide service to my customers, how to grow social media presence, how do I follow up, and more. It amazes me that such an enterprise actually arose out of such an economic devastation. When I simply became obsessed with getting my money right, with turning it around, with survival and flourishing and prospering. At a time of crisis, I looked at the assets, the inventory of my produce. Like I was back in the grocery store. What's going to go bad tomorrow? What do I have that will sell? What do I have that I can exchange with the marketplace for attention and or money that I could bring to the market? In this case, the asset was in my head. All this sales knowledge, the problem solving was in this history, this commitment I had made at 25 to learn to love a job that I hated, to become obsessed with the thing that I was in. You understand? So the very thing that I detested at 25 saved my life at 50 because I was obsessed at 25. And again at 50, I was obsessed to solve the problem. 3 hours, Seller Be Sold was written in 3 hours. It's the easiest book I ever wrote. Just spilled. This book started a movement and reignited my career at 50 years old. I took this product to the market and people exchanged money and time and energy and attention and accolades and awards for my knowledge of how to make sales in a marketplace when people weren't buying things. That's what they said. Nobody's buying anything. When Borders closed their doors, Borders, you remember them? They used to sell books, or actually not sell books, and therefore close their doors. I was selling books door to door. I actually called Borders and said, hey, I want to take my self-published book. I'll come do an event at every one of your Borders, at my expense, by the way, around the country. I'll bring people in a room and we'll sign books. They said, we can't do that. They went out of business and I didn't. I sold books and they can't. I was selling books door to door and growing my business and my brand. I was creating money while Borders was closing their doors. Obsessed with the past, blaming technology, blaming the economy for their demise. Look, get obsessed with your financial success. Get obsessed with getting your money right or you will be punished every single day. I know people that have money in the bank that are being punished because they have not gotten their money completely right enough so that they don't have to be in fear every second of every day. Feed the beast with great people. Feed the beast with a commitment to having great people. Look, if you're really obsessed with feeding the beast and being super successful, then it's important to surround yourself with great people who respect and understand this concept. In all 5 companies I own today, I've created cultures of success focused on feeding the beast together. We do this with lots of urgency, lots of deadlines. We become single-minded in our focus for short periods of time. We ignore all our other successes and even the problems and the challenges. We become obsessed with the project. We become obsessed with solutions, not problems. There's no tolerance for counter orders, alternative ideas, watered down versions. Yeah, buts are an introduction of new themes, which reminds me of some things that are going on right now in my company. And I need to go in there and whack some heads off, get rid of the weeds and let that St. Augustine grow thick. When an order is given to do something, it needs to be crystal clear, simple, measurable, and achievable. And then executives should reinforce it until it's fully executed and the results are achieved. That's right. The results are achieved. You don't come up short on a target. You don't lower a target. Achieve the target. Take the village. Every order should come with a target and a deadline and a report. How do we do today? The more important that target is and that deadline, the more often you should have reports sent to you. So I'm working on a project right now. I want to report every hour. The more attention I put on that destination and giving me that update every hour, the better chance I have of achieving that target. The more important the target is, the more often you should get a report on that target and the achievement of that target, the update on where we're at. The first time I asked for hourly reports from my internet department on our internet sales, I had to repeat this request for days because it was so unreal to the team leader that anyone would actually want a report every hour. He actually did not think, after I told him 26 times, that I actually wanted a report every hour. Now imagine this. Can you imagine owning a company, being a guy like me? Everybody knows I'm an intense, obsessed, crazy guy talking about Beast and 10X. And I tell this guy, hey, I need a report every hour. 3 hours later, I'm like, dude, I need a report every hour. Okay. Literally, I told this guy for days, I need a report every hour. It was unbelievable to him that anybody would want a report every hour. I want a report so I can tweak the program, so I can ensure that we succeed. Speed is the new big. Adjust quickly. Commit. Be obsessed with the success of the program. If it doesn't work, tweak it. Look at it. Pay attention to it. If that meant getting a report on our sales every hour, every 15 minutes, every 2 minutes, what do I care? I want to know how we're doing. I want to win. I'm obsessed with the winning. Meet with your team every day. Anything worth doing, I said earlier, is worth doing every day. If you don't meet with your team as a team every day, your team will soon devolve into a bunch of people going in different directions that think they're on the same team but aren't. Over time, you will not be able to maximize the success you deserve and are guaranteed to fail because of a lack of confidence and a lack of activity by this team. This is especially true in sales, but in every department and every division of a company. Now, sales gets a bad reputation because it's filled with mostly uncommitted amateurs who've never even read a sales book, who have no clue what they're doing, who are not held accountable, are not properly motivated, who are insufficiently trained. And then we're like, man, those salespeople are terrible. Well, of course. Your daily sales meetings should reinforce who your company is, what your company does, and what you want from your team. What do you expect from your team? What do you provide to customers? Where are the wins and successes of your companies? Look, I put my sales team together every day to remind them how good our product is. What am I doing? I am selling them on selling. All this feeds the beast. Feed the beast. Encourage through attention. Either you or your manager needs to walk into your sales office every hour to make sure that that team or the members aren't off doing their own thing. Look, I don't care if you simply walk through the room and touch a couple of them saying, hey, great job today. Awesome job today. Okay? Get on the phone, son. We're in a hurry to help people. Okay? I don't care what you walk in there and say. Just be seen. Let them know you're paying attention. When I'm walking through our sales department, I might even intervene on a call. I can't help myself most of the time because I'm obsessed. I'm obsessed with the deal. I'm obsessed with growth. I'm obsessed with my customers and I'm obsessed with my people. Most of the time I just walk through just for my presence. And that by itself can get them back focused on the goal. Celebrate your successes. One day I received an email from a client saying that they had invested over $20,000 in one of our entry-level training products and had made $3 million as a result in the first 90 days. Not a bad ROI. I grabbed the phone, recorded a quick video in which I read the email and congratulated the team and the salesperson responsible. Then I emailed it to the VP of the sales department to play for everyone again the next day. Look, if you don't have time to celebrate your staff and their successes, then you have your priorities wrong. A business depends on new and existing customers and the energy necessary to go get, acquire, and keep customers is vital to the growth of your company and your dreams and purposes. You better get obsessed with your team's success or your people will soon slack to below average. Remember, out of sight, out of mind, the fish stinks from the head down. If you act like success is not important, it will become unimportant. Create company mottos, your mottos. You don't need to steal something off Instagram. Create your own mottos. I challenge you, anytime you're in Miami Beach, come visit our offices. And you're going to see along the walls mottos everywhere. I surround my people with my beliefs and my sayings. What do I believe in? What is my culture? Who am I? What do I stand for? When you first come to my offices, you're going to see the front doors or glass. You're going to see when you walk into the sales department or the boiler room, glass doors. You're going to see on every office, big, giant glass doors. The reason I have so much glass in my office is because I am a transparent and authentic person. The reason you're going to see quotes on every wall is because I have a special idea about my company, my people, my economy, my money, and my future. And I put that on that wall. Like, for instance, we're in a hurry to serve. It's a great motto, man. We are in a hurry to serve. Success is my duty. Or how about this? I refuse to let the customer not do business with us. No one can buy a lower price. When value exceeds price, people make decisions. If the buyer doesn't buy, it's our fault, not their fault. I refuse not to call my customer back, even if they tell me not to call them back. See, this is the culture I want. Things like not buying my product costs you more than buying my product costs you. That's a reminder for my people to see. I do more than is asked of me with every opportunity. I don't need to be here forever, but I will be all here today. I know my people aren't going to work for me forever. I might not be here forever, but I'm going to be all here today. And I refuse to show up average. Look, bury your people in sales messages, in mottos, in the culture you are committed to. Feed them constantly. Feed them intravenously if you can. They need to have the energy, the motivation, the confidence, the food, the fuel, the energy to make those extra calls, to pay attention to those extra customers, to see opportunities maybe that you are just completely oblivious to at this time. Instill in them what you are so aware of, what you're committed to, that in each moment they can be obsessed as well, or they can be average. That is the makeup of your company. Do you have people that are obsessed or do you have people that are average? It's black, it's white, it's crystal clear. And very few people are obsessed. Who teaches anybody to be obsessed except the obsessed? So again, I hope this book gives you permission to be obsessed and quit apologizing and then start finding other freaks like you. Now that we've looked at how to feed the beast, you feed the beast and starve the doubt. Personally, feed the beast, and then feed the beast in your organization. We need to address the other side of the coin. The doubt. The boogeyman. Fear. Chapter 5. Starve the doubt. Doubt is the dream killer. Most people are filled with doubt that they're unable to believe in themselves enough to become obsessed with their own success. Instead, they let their fear lead the way. I believe that your fanatical all-in mentality, which everyone, by the way, has caused you to doubt, is not actually the problem. Doubt is the problem. Doubt is the most dangerous and insidious form of mental terrorism on this planet. Doubt damages people, organizations, marriages, and dreams. It's certainly been the biggest problem in my life. In the late 1990s, I got caught up in the major movement in America where it became popular to dig into your past and figure out the cause of all your problems. Hopefully, find your inner child. A massive multi-hundred-billion-dollar industry had grown around the idea that mommy and daddy gave you either too little attention or too much. The focus became the so-called dysfunctional family. And your search for your inner child, which, I mean, it seems crazy when I say it right now. The inner child. The little boy or girl inside of me. Everyone was talking about how broken they were and how their parents had screwed them up so terribly. Everything was labeled an addiction at that time, a disease. Work became a disease. Sex became a disease. Drugs, pets, you name it. There was addiction to addicts. I went to group meetings, attended 12-step workshops, and sought out counselors who could help me find the cause of my problems. If you're a searcher, you're looking for what's wrong with you. Because you know you're not living the life you should be. Here in the essence of that industry at that time, and regardless of the label you might be given, you were ultimately told that you were powerless and were destined to never get over whatever your problems are. Over the past 20 years, this trend has continued to expand. Some people who can't even afford to buy a house has a counselor, a rent-a-friend, who is more likely to talk about how screwed up they are than how great they are. That is, they're going to sit you, listen, put you on a sofa, and you're going to talk about how your life is screwed up, how bad it is, how insufficient you are, rather than talking about how great you are and what your possibilities are and what your purpose is. I once went to a counselor with my girlfriend. We were having some troubles. I mean, how could you not have trouble with a guy like me? I'm obsessed. She wants to be satisfied. Okay? Problem. We're there. I want to talk about how great I can be. I want to talk about how many plus points I have. I want to talk about how fast we can go at conquering the world. I want to talk about my ambitions and my successes in this counselor meeting. And the counselor, the psychologist, who never had a degree, by the way, who would charge $200 for an hour, but only deliver 50 minutes. Okay. The counselor immediately recommended to me after one session a prescription for lithium. Lithium is a drug filled with iron, a metal base. She prescribed me lithium and suggested my girlfriend get on something as well. She needed something to get her up and I need something to take me down. Clearly, she thought my obsession was dangerous to society and definitely to this relationship. Now, I'm describing this to you so you can understand what you're going against when you commit to this obsession thing. When you become obsessed with success, you're going to have them prescribe you lithium, Prozac, you name it. They're going to call you ADD, ADHD. I'm describing this whole scene to you so you can understand what you're getting into and up against when you commit to obsession to be successful. When I first began to turn my life around, I was surrounded by an entire industry, $100 billion industry that told me I was emotionally scarred, powerless, an addict to every variation, to everything I was an addict, not in control of. I was told that I had an obsessive nature, an addictive personality that was part of a genetic makeup without any understanding of my father's genetic makeup or my grandfather's. That I had no control over anything of these problems, none of these problems, and no chance of ever being free of them. I was stuck with this forever. This caused me so much deep confusion and doubt. Then one day while I was attending, I mean, I'm damaged goods, right? One day I'm attending this men's weekend workshop. I looked around at all these men, all these weekends we had done, all these weekends where men would talk about their father issues over and over and over. And I realized in a moment, all these people are talking about the same problem over and over. They're focused on how broken they are, how out of control they are. And they stay broken and out of control. They became obsessed with their brokenness. None of them were getting better. The leaders of the groups had marriages falling apart, struggling with their finances, filing bankruptcy. They were obsessed with their problems, with their brokenness, with their damagedness. And I was obsessed with my possibility. It took me a long time to finally wake up to this. But eventually I realized you don't fix problems with problems. You fix problems with a future. You fix problems with success. I cut myself out of that group and many groups like it. I quit reading those books, listening to those programs, realizing that they were enamoring people, imprisoning individuals that had a past, who doesn't, with bad information, poor results, suicide higher than normal, and medication. Today, I let myself absorb advice and help only from people who are doing better than me, who have the things that I don't yet had. I believe in the saying, if you're the most successful person in the room, you're in the wrong room. I believe that. I want to be around other people that are successful. Haven't you tried that way long enough? Look, stop looking at where you've been and what happened to you. Make it clear to everyone you are done assigning blame. and with the kind of self-discovery that leaves you powerless. You got to quit ripping the wounds, man. Where are you going? Remind them not to fight your genius, but to get behind your genius. Encourage people around you to see what you see. Sell them on this concept of a future, not a past. Convince them it's better to look forward than backwards, and demand that they get behind you, by the side of you, and support you or get away from you. Yes, you're fanatical. I don't need a psychiatrist to tell me I'm a fanatic. Then I'm all in. Then I'm crazy. Then I'm a whack. I admit it. Why don't you tell him first? I don't need a psychiatrist with an 8-year degree to tell me that I'm different than most people. I've known that my whole life. Yes, you are fanatical. And yes, the mission might be impossible. And yes, you know no one has ever done it before, and no one has ever done it exactly the way you're going to do it. But none of those conditions are a cause for your doubt. Respond with determination. Respond with and by going all in. Doubt and blame are dead to you. Make it known. You know, Mr. Wonderful on Shark Tank, you are dead to me now as an investment. Make it known to all who need to know, family, friends, employers, employees, that you are prepared to go all in on all your obsessions. Let them know doubt and fear are dead to me. Tell them I am addicted to, just tell them, label yourself. Don't let somebody else label you. I am addicted to, obsessed with, and committed to my future regardless of my past. Be the Muhammad Ali of your life. Brand yourself. I am the greatest. Nobody knew he was the greatest. He wasn't even sure. The world would know later because he said it so often. And then he showed up and threw himself into the ring. Let them see, let the people around you see that you have removed your foot from the brake and are stepping only on the accelerator. Make it clear that you will not tolerate doubt from anyone around you, that you have no time for blame, and that you expect complete and total support to move forward with life, that doubt will be treated like the enemy. They already think you're crazy. What do you have to lose? Let's get everybody to know that you're crazy, to know that you're dangerous, to know that you're all in. See, they can't label you anymore or give you advice if you stick the label on yourself. In your office, make it clear that you will no longer tolerate others doubting your vision or blaming others or anything or any reason for coming up short on a target. Let everyone know that you're not wishing for success. You're not praying for it, crossing your fingers. You don't believe in the fairy tale, the tooth fairy, or whoever. And you demand success at levels that you all, the group, thought was previously impossible. And you expect everyone else to support, comply, and make that a reality. They already don't like you. Trust me, the people that work for you, at least 30% of them, if you're lucky, are disengaged. If it's a national average, 70% of them are disengaged at your job. They don't like you. They resent you. They don't want to be there. If they're not going to like you, give them a reason to. Oh my gosh, you say, this is going to create havoc, turmoil. The company is going to come flying apart. Better for the company to come flying apart than you never to get the life that you want. Remember, it is your company. It is your family. It is your life. My family and my employees can't handle all these obsessed changes at one time. Everybody tells me that. Oh, you're going to give them too much? There's going to be a dissent, upheaval, confusion. But all that's better than doubt. How can that be worse than doubt and fear and shrinking? These things you are so worried about are already happening. And worse, you're attaining low-level success, much lower than your potential and that you deserve. Doubt has kept you from getting where you want to go. It has left you without a purpose or an obsession. This very lack of clarity is what has allowed the doubts to take hold in the first place. Beware of where your doubt grows. Doubt grows in every area of our life where we think we're taking care of ourselves. I know because I've been there. I've done that and I've suffered for it. You know, I tried this conventional wisdom. Take care of yourself. You're going to burn out. Oh, go slow. You could have a heart attack. I've heard all that. See, I've tried this conventional wisdom to slow down. I know it isn't a good idea for me to avoid burnout like the plague. I know that's for sure. But the world will tell you, avoid the burnout. Avoid the heart attack. Avoid the stress. But in truth, I know that that is the very cause of those same problems. I don't think lengthy vacations are good for me. I don't seek a balance in my life. I seek a life. The person that's seeking balance in their life is seeking something smaller. I'm seeking life, not an adjective to life. My experience in life has turned all these notions on their heads. For instance, the myth of burnout. In my late 30s, I was living in La Jolla, California and running a seminar business that was delivering 16 8-hour seminars per month in different cities around America. On Martin Luther King Day, on Memorial Day, on Thanksgiving, I would fly to Canada and deliver seminars there so I could work because America was shut down. I delivered seminars almost every day of the month. Whenever I wasn't in front of an audience all day long, I was working on my consulting business, growing that. My calendar was slammed. I didn't even know what day it was. I work 8 days. I didn't know what day it was. You talk about 24/7 and I'm looking for 25/8. Just prior to my 40th birthday, I started experiencing what others had described as burnout. I was losing the luster. I was tired. I was irritable. I was angry. And I was becoming demanding like, you know, the divas that you see on TV. I didn't like the way I was acting. I started seeing a nutritionist. He told me everything that was wrong with me. I tried meditation, just didn't know when to stop. People were telling me I was looking tired, that I was working too hard, and that my life was out of balance. And the more people that would tell me that, the more I was experiencing that. I had heard it all before, but this time I bought it. I bought, sell or be sold, I bought the program. I'm burning out. You know, they tell you, you're burning the candle at both ends. I reduced myself from a spiritual being to a piece of wax. I bought the story. So every time I would go out on a trip, I started feeling sorry for myself. Oh man, I'm working too hard. Too many hours. I'm going too much. There is no balance. Why am I doing this? I'm going to burn out. I'm going to have a heart attack. All of this was made up. I'm feeding the fear. My friends, people that love me, confused as they were helping kill me. Killing my dreams, killing my obsessions, killing my purpose. And so I become burnt out. And I started telling myself the same. I decided to take a hard look at my current situation to see what I had to do to get myself back being obsessed and in love, immersed with all that I was doing rather than feeling this burnout. It didn't make sense to me. I could be 40 years old, simply be tired because I was working and traveling too much. How can that be? This was the easiest job I had done in my life compared to what I used to do. This was easy work, as Jay-Z says. Easy work. I was standing up and talking to hundreds of professional salespeople about something I loved. I was young. I had plenty of energy. I didn't mind working hard. I was being paid unbelievable money at that time. What do I have to complain about? But I was burning out. Why? Was it the work or was it the people telling me I was burning out? Feed the beast and starve the doubt. So I sat down with a piece of paper. And I took an inventory of my life. What is my purpose in life and what am I currently doing? I asked myself, if I get back to my purpose and clarify my goals, I thought I'll get back on track. As I wrote, it hit me just as the truth always does. The truth is the truth. It never lies. Immediately and clearly, I realized I had lost track of the bigger purpose. It actually wasn't the people talking to me. It wasn't the job. I was no longer obsessed with a bigger goal. I had started to settle and be satisfied with repeating what I was doing and settling for simply being busy, for working, for being paid, and for some modest financial success. Oh, by the way, that financial success at that time, I was like, wow, that's a lot of money. That's a lot of success. But not compared to my potential. See, none of this was in any way in line with what I knew inside of me I was capable of, here for, and what's my true purpose. The burnout had started because I was no longer obsessed with fulfilling my monster giant purpose and continue to build on what I was doing. The seminars had become repetitive. I was a public speaker with a rote delivery. Same thing, different audience. But my purpose had never been to just travel around talking to audiences about the same thing and collecting money. Do you understand? Yet somehow I'd gone from a someone with a dream of being a serious businessman to just a guy that stood on stage and said the same thing over and over. Once I realized this, see, I'm not a piece of wax. You cannot burn a spiritual being. It's impossible as long as you're on purpose. How do you burn up a spiritual being? Immortal, eternal, can't see it, can't touch it. How do you burn that up? I'm not a piece of wax, okay? Now, once I realized this, oh, by the way, my dad died of a heart attack. So everybody around me thinks that I'm supposed to have a heart attack. I don't have heart problems, okay? I don't know why everybody's, my heart bleeds, hurts the most when I don't work. Once I realized this, I started to ask myself, what do I need to do today to get back to being obsessed, fanatical, crazy, excited? See, I'd been fascinated with this idea of creating a new way of selling that would change the world, not just to one vertical, one industry, but the entire world. I was speaking at this time only to one industry. And I reminded myself, I'd always wanted to have a bigger audience, international, and I wanted to build this real estate company. I decided I would split up my company. I'd create a consulting company for the auto industry. See, the problem actually became my solution. I'd create a consulting company for the auto industry, expand the brand of my speaking career to serve other verticals, and step hard, hard into the real estate business. Rather than backing off, I poured fuel onto my obsessions. Rather than taking the advice of my friends and family and everybody else that certainly had some input on me burning out, because they were burnt out, because they burnt out the candle, the light on their candle, because they are figuring out why they quit, trying to make sense of it, convincing me to quit. As it turns out, I wasn't burnt out. Once I reaffirmed my purpose, I immediately felt rejuvenated and excited, back on track. I quit asking these people, friends and family, and those with free advice. I quit asking average people who had quit for advice, quit questioning me, and went full bore toward what I know. Only I can know. Only you know what you're here for. The woman you sleep with, the man you sleep with, you can exchange fluids with them, but they don't know what's inside of you. See, I had to refocus, and you have to refocus those obsessions, even when you're successful, with fulfilling and refocusing on your complete potential, not just being satisfied financially. Now the challenge was to make this obsession public and acquire help to get me there. In a couple of months, I had a promotional company promoting my seminars. A partner picked me up and took over our consulting business. A sweat equity partner came to me and said, hey, I want to help you grow your real estate business. Literally, it happened like magic once I got back on track. Soon I found myself back on track, moving faster than ever, obsessed, interested, excited, and anything but burnout. Look, when you're clear on your purpose, you will never burn out. And by the way, I don't even think it's real. You're not a candle. You can burn at both ends and never burn out. The myth of time off and vacations. Now, I could be wrong on this, but the myth of time off and vacations, while it's popular to think that you need to reward yourself with a vacation or time off from work to relax, to unplug, to rejuvenate, in reality, most people aren't in a position to take a vacation long enough to actually unwind in the first place. Like 3 days is not going to cause anybody to unwind. You need like 2 or 3 weeks. But most people don't have the money or the time or the freedom to go do 3 weeks. And while a vacation can feel to be a bit of relief, I know people that tell me when they get back, they felt overwhelmed by the work that they missed and they have to catch up on. The point of always getting away to rejuvenate is not just about the body, but about the purpose. When do I take off to go rejuvenate my purpose? See, I believe that when you're fully, full tilt, obsessed with achieving your full potential and making a monster, giant contribution to the world, you will naturally rejuvenate, regenerate, and create new energy. I know I've been on vacations that took more energy from me than the work. Literally, the vacation took more energy than the work I thought I was trying to get from. How much golf can you actually play? Okay. How much time can you spend in the sun? People are vacation starved because they believe time off is going to renew them. The only thing that's going to ultimately renew you is getting reobsessed with your purpose. Where do you want to go? Jamaica? Or do you want to make your dreams come true? See, I think people think, oh, I'm going to go to Cabo and my life is going to be better. When in truth is, you got to get obsessed with your life to make your life better. That's why so many successful people do not see work as work. They're driving, I can't wait to get over there, right? See, also, and by the way, those people don't always have to work for themselves. I also think free time is one of the bigger threats to your success. I have a saying, if you want to meet the devil, have white space on your calendar. He'll come meet you. Take enough time off and you will meet the devil. If I look back over my life, the biggest mistakes I've made in my life, the big problems in my life, when I made or had bad judgment is when I had too much time off. When do you spend the most money? When you had the most time off. Look, taking time off early in my entrepreneurial career almost derailed my life. I know this from personal experience. When I had steeled my determination to go out on my own, I made the mistake of once again listening to my friends and my family and the people that love me who had already quit, who said I was working too hard. I started listening again. They get inside my head. You know, it's pretty easy to get inside Grant's head. You got a big head. They said a break, Grant, would be good for you. Instead of running headfirst into a new venture, which is what I should have done, and into my new obsessions, I hit the brake. Backseat drivers of my life. They won't sit behind the steering wheel, but they'll tell me from the backseat how I should drive it, how fast I should go. See, I bought a house in Houston. I got a little settled down. I got me a girlfriend. This is early on. I'm 29 years old. I had left one job, started my own company with the intention I'm going to go full bore. And I got derailed. Went and bought a house. That was stupid. Got me a girlfriend. Stupid. You're trying to start a business. You don't need a girlfriend. You need a business. You need focus. I went and spent $2,000 on a computer back when computers cost $2,000. That was the most money I ever spent in my life. Like a computer is going to make me money. 30 years ago, a computer couldn't make you money. It was impossible. Wasn't connected to anything. Okay. I would go to my little executive office that I had and all day I'd spend time planning, organizing, writing, did a lot of organizing, lots of getting stuff in the right place, labeling stuff. I took my time. When I say I took my time, I mean 1 year later and I still hadn't called on a customer. 1 year had gone by, went by and I still hadn't produced any money. When I say took my time, I mean that 1 year went by and I hadn't even started doing my real work. One day I called my brother Gary, my twin brother, identical. He's working for a big company to see how you doing, Gary? He says to me, Grant, quit calling me at work during working hours. Quit calling me at work during the week. I have a business to run. When are you going to start running your business? I thought to myself, I am running my business. Into the ground. Look, he said, I'll never forget. It rings in my head today. When are you going to start calling on clients, Grant, and building your business? This cut me deep. Still have scars from it today because it was the truth. I had traded in the obsession to build a business for organizing a business. I had exchanged my obsession with building a business and being an entrepreneur with hanging out with friends. Going to movies, buying a house, soccer, softball, weekend barbecues, and too much introspection. Hell, I had spent all this time learning how to use the customer's information filing system on my computer and didn't have any customers to put in the computer. When my brother laid into me with the truth, it broke through me and gave me the inspiration I needed to put my head down and go into complete immersion and total obsession with my new company. The following Monday, I was on a plane to Albuquerque, ready to recommit to my plan. I am not most happy when I am not working. I am most happy when I am producing, when I am in line with my purpose, my obsession, and my reason for being here. Look, that doesn't make me defective. On this planet, if a person goes all in, there's something wrong with them. On this planet, if a person takes time off, they're normal. How can that make sense? It makes me productive, not defective. I am simply happiest when I am most productive. You might be too. Regardless of what others say, they don't know you. They don't know what you want. They don't know about your dreams. Don't let anyone tell you, not even your family members, don't let anyone tell you how you should feel about your obsession with success. They don't know. And quit apologizing to or making sense of or trying to negotiate your way into them understanding. Just tell them, I want it all. I don't want part of it. I don't want some of it. I want it all. I want a great marriage. I want great money. I want great kids. I want a great company. I want it all. And to those out there,